C2SP. Number 8B.
Another example here, though the inharmony resulting from material sense hides the harmony of science, inharmony cannot destroy the divine principle of science. Again, another example which says that harmony remains harmony. It has identity, it's immortal, it's an idea, and that remains no matter if it is hidden away, if it erased, if the tones are erased, the numbers are erased, if the material senses hide harmony, that the material senses don't see harmony, that does not mean that harmony is extinguished, that there is no harmony. The material senses cannot testify to the identity of an idea, therefore to the immortality of an idea. So summing it up, she says, in science, man's immortality, she comes back to that subject of immortality, depends upon that of God or good. So it doesn't depend on the physical sense, it doesn't depend on man's assertion, it doesn't depend on what spirits communicate us, it doesn't depend on anything except one thing, namely on God. And therefore follows as a necessary consequence of the immortality of good. So here in the very last sentence, she sums it up, really what the subject is that she was explaining, namely that immortality cannot be proved in any other way than to go out from the logic of deducing from God the nature of God, because soul is immortal, therefore man, which is God's creation, must be mortal too. And then we have a scientific statement. Then we have a statement in science, man's immortality. And not in spiritualism, man's immortality. And not in man's assertion, immortality, so and so. And this is naturally true not only of immortality, that's true about every fact. Here, naturally in spiritualism, that subject of immortality is a central point, because spiritualism's main point is to prove against all other assertions that man is immortal. But science comes along and says, that's no proof for us. Our only proof is that God is immortal. If God is not immortal, man cannot be immortal either. And as God is good, the immortality of God is a scientific fact. Yes. This is the subject of soul. It has taken me nearly half an hour to explain what we usually say in a few seconds. Man is immortal. He's immortal. See? So we leave it at that, because we read it in the textbook, man is immortal, not knowing how to prove it or how to say, to logically reason it out, why is immortal. So if we say man is immortal, the spiritualists come and say, I agree with you. You know, Christian science is actually nothing else but spiritualism, because in spiritualism, we also see that man is immortal. And we even have more proofs than you. We even can talk to the departed and say how they are, and that they tell us how they are and what they should have a message for the children or the wife that is left behind and so on. We have even more proof than you in Christian science when you assert that man is immortal. So both are spiritualistic, so to say, statements. We have to see that immortality depends on God. Yes, that's an easy, clear-cut statement how to uncover really what immortality is. See, we are in the second part of uncovering it. Now we have two different school of thought, so to say, spiritualism and Christian Science, stating the same thing, immortality. So is that immortality really immortality? Or is it not immortality, that statement? And so we have to uncover which statement is true. That only the statement of immortality derived from the immortality of God is true, and therefore the other statement must be just a belief, an assertion. Is that clear, that we have always the same phenomena, and yet they are not the same? We had in mind the phenomena of healing disease through beliefs and the healing of disease through the divine mind. The phenomena of phenomenon is healing. But healing is not healing. Healing can be belief or it can be science. It can be divine mind healing or it can be belief healing, faith healing, etc. Thought power healing. We had in the second subject the same phenomena, namely that there can be that there is a force that convulses matter. Is that force that can convulse matter, is that spiritualistic or is it science? And so the phenomena that is the same is traced back in spiritualism as the force of mortal mind, the force of human mind that moves matter, whereas in Christian Science that force was traced back to the divine spirit that is able to give to our body strength, that gives to our body endurance, and gives strength in every way. So strength is a phenomenon, but we must uncover, is that phenomenon a divine phenomenon or is it a belief phenomenon? Now the third is now immortality, and we have seen it, that we have to trace it back also. Is that concept of immortality of the spiritualist the same as the concept of immortality of the Christian Scientist? And we uncover that it is not the same. It's the same word, but it is not the same thing. And now we come to principle, and here again we have a common phenomenon, namely mind reading. And so the next rather long subject on principle that goes over many pages is all about principle and the phenomenon of mind reading. The epitome here is, we see it right away, in Christian Science, divine mind reading is based on the divine principle, whereas in spiritualism, mortal mind reading is based on human beliefs. Now, this already brings out the uncovering of it, but outwardly seen as a phenomenon, we just have mind reading. And we don't know, in the first place, if that mind reading is mortal mind reading or is it divine mind reading. We can't always see that right away. And therefore, if there are people who are well trained in mortal mind reading, the human mind reading, just as also primitive people are trained in it, for them it is an easy job to read mortal mind over great, great distances, over hundreds of miles, and to read the thought of another person, That's for them natural, just as it is for us natural to write the letter and to read the letter and therefore know what the writer has said and get the message. This is only a question of training, of culture, and today we have lost really that ability of mortal mind reading, and therefore we are astonished if there, here and there, somebody pops up who can do it, and then we look at it as a terrific marvel, and we think he's more spiritually minded, he's more divinely gifted than we are, because we don't know how to uncover the phenomenon. So Mrs. Eddy gives here a large, large text to deal with that very phenomenon. Because in spiritualism, naturally, the intercommunication, the transmission of thought is central to spiritualism, and so it is a subject that has many, many facets, and she takes it up and shows the difference between divine mind reading and mortal mind reading. Yes. So, first we can see from the Epitome book that this subject is first of all laid out in 7 subtones. We also see right away, if we just look with the eyes at the epitomes, that then the subtone of truth is further defined through 7 subtones, so that there we will get a very finely individualized sense of the subject. Now, let's start out and first get a good foundation in this question, and we get here first principle as mind. We consider now this phenomena of mind reading from the point of view of mind, and our epitome is that thought reading is possible and natural. So this phenomena of thought reading is under discussion, and I read the text. That somebody somewhere must have known the deceased person, so here she's talking about those who have gone, not of those who are still living, must have known the deceased person, supposed to be the communicator, supposed to be the spirit, is evident, and it is as easy to read distant thoughts as near. So we get first the sense that in Christian Science we must acknowledge that thought reading, that mind reading distant and is natural. She says it's evident. Why is that so evident? We think of an absent friend as easily as we do of one present. Isn't that true? We can think of somebody who lives on the other side of the globe right now, just as easily as we can think about the next one sitting next to you. Thought have no time and have no space. They are in a realm that is not confined through the three-dimensional sense, the material three-dimensional sense that is free without any boundaries. Thoughts are free, therefore they are not restricted to place and space. If I would know that right up there in the galaxy there is a friend of mine, I could think of him right now. See, so distance doesn't make any difference for thought. Thought is quicker than the light, and therefore if we want to break the barriers of light, we must, I guess, break it through through the means of thought, so that thought power and thought energy will have to be that which is quicker than the light. After all, the light takes quite some time to get to the moon. I don't know how many seconds, but we are just in one split second, our thoughts can be there. So it shows here really something that we have to think of the mental realm as a realm that is above the material realm. The material realm is a three-dimensional realm. The mental realm is a multidimensional realm that has no limitation whatever. So it is, furthermore, she says, it is no more difficult to read the absent mind than it is to read the present. Can you see? These are statements in the textbook. Because one knows that those Christian scientists who dislike the chapter on spiritualism, who never think they would ever read the chapter or study the chapter on spiritualism because they said, well, spiritualism is anyway nonsense, so why should I read a lot about nonsense? They will find out that they are nonsense, that they make nonsense, not the textbook. So let's get acquainted with these facts here. It is no more difficult to read the absent mind than it is to read the present mind. Chaucer wrote centuries ago, yet we still read his thought in his verse. We can really know what Chaucer was thinking. What is classical study but discernment of the minds of Homer and Virgil, of whose personal existence we may be in doubt? We can even read thoughts about a character that has not existed, about a person that has not existed. But what is, so to say, put on him as a thinking atmosphere is still there. So it doesn't depend if Shakespeare lived and or didn't live, if he was a historical person or not a historical person, if Virgil was a historical person or not, what the thoughts that have been given there are still here and can be discerned, though the personal existence may be in doubt. The very same thing is true about Moses. What Moses said is very little, but what the Bible says about what Moses has said is a great deal, which means that not everything that the Bible says that Moses said is actually from Moses, but has put on Moses. And they did the same trick as we do. If we don't know anymore to say something, or if we want to say something new, which may get opposition, we just say, well, John Dolly said. Nobody can prove it afterwards if he said it or not. So we see that an atmosphere, a mental atmosphere, does not only consist of what a person has been thinking, but also what one has put on a person thinking. Yes, so therefore that stays in the general atmosphere. So first we have here a simple statement that we acquaint ourselves first that thought reading is possible and natural. She doesn't say it is Christian Science. She just says that's a mental atmosphere, and in that mental atmosphere it is possible and it is natural. Yeah, it's evident. Yeah. We come to a second aspect of mind reading, spirit. The epitome here is different states of consciousness cannot intercommune. You hear here spirit, namely different states, you make differences, and if you have different states, then they cannot commune with each other. This is an important point now to show that actually only like can communicate with like, that only like can read like. If spiritual life has been won by the departed, they cannot return to material existence. So here she takes up that subject again. There is no retrograde step. Spirituality cannot retrograde to materiality because different states of consciousness are involved. So there are different levels, so to say, of consciousness are involved. And one person cannot exist in two different states of consciousness at the same time. So this is important to remember. We cannot therefore communicate with a level which we have outgrown spiritually. Therefore she wants to say those that are spiritual cannot communicate with those mentalities that are material. That's not possible. There is no communication between different altitudes of consciousness. In a slight way, you experience that time and time again in your life, that if you have a certain kind of spiritual insight into being, you can no more communicate with a hard-boiled materialist. There is no possibility of meeting. There is no meeting point, I think you say. You argue everyone on a different level and you never come together. You never converge. There are two different states and one cannot more communicate with the other because two different states of consciousness man cannot be. So we cannot be at the same time on two different states of consciousness. If we progress, we leave the old behind, and we can no more communicate with that. In sleep, for instance, we do not communicate with the dreamer by our side, in spite of his physical proximity, because both of us are either unconscious or are wandering in our dreams through different mazes of consciousness. So she comes back again to different mazes of consciousness, to different states of consciousness. The dreamer is a completely different level of consciousness than the awake one, the one that is awake, that takes the material universe with all its limitation as real and as factual. The dreamer is perhaps completely free from this three-dimensional universe. He can fly through the air, he can walk through the walls, he can do all sorts of things that are absolutely impossible on the material plane of things. So he is in a completely different maze of consciousness than the one that is awake, though they are very near to each other. They may lie side by side and yet be in a completely different world. And so it is also in the daydreams or in our daily life that we sometimes feel that we live in a completely different world than our neighbor next door. That he has a different concept of life and argues differently and conceives things differently, values things differently than we do. And there is no more any communication between the both. And so we just say hello and that's that. Or hello. Or hi. In like manner, she takes another example to explain the very same thing. In like manner, it would follow, even if our departed friends were near us and were in a conscious state of existence as before the change we call death, that their state of consciousness must be different from ours. That experience that they went through, what is called death, is such a terrific experience that changes their whole view, just as the one who falls asleep and dreams goes into another level of consciousness, and so there is no communication. We are not in their state, nor are they in the mental realm in which we dwell. So it's always mental realm. So that the mental realm of the departed is another mental realm than we have who still dwell here. Communion between them and ourselves would be prevented by this difference. So that difference of level prevents communication. The mental states are so unlike, you see, spirit always, that intercommunion is as impossible as it would be between a mole and a human being. That mole that is just sitting outside the house and makes a mole hill, he cannot communicate with me. He doesn't know how upset I am when in the morning he has made another molehill. So he thinks differently than I do. Different dreams. Yeah. It's awful to wake up in the morning, look out into that meadow which you have cared for so nicely, and there are 10 molehills there, you know. So different dreams and different awakenings, also awakenings, betoken a different consciousness. When wandering in Australia, do we look for help to the Eskimos in their snow huts? There are different realms. Yes, that's the second statement. Huh? So first it says thought reading, mind reading is possible. We shouldn't shut that out. It is a natural phenomenon in the mental realm. Then the second subject says in spirit, but this interchange of thought, this mind reading, is only possible on its own level, not for other levels, for different states of consciousness. There you don't intercommunicate. Yeah. That would bring us to a next subject, but we make a break here.